using this word awareness to mean mindfulness in this particular retreat. Just wanting to acknowledge the different ways different people use this term at different times. And there's not really a general accepted word in the Pali Canon that is usually translated as awareness. There are different words that people associate or kind of use in conjunction with awareness at times in the Pali Canon. And so two in particular that are often connected to this word awareness. The first is mindfulness. This just really simple, ordinary capacity of our minds to know that we know, as a basic, simple definition. And another one is consciousness. This knowing quality, knowing aspect of the mind that with every moment of experience meets or knows this is what's happening. It's just this very basic quality. You want me to turn it up a little bit? Down a little bit? Okay. It was down a little bit before. How is that? Is that okay? Is that good? Can everybody hear this way? Okay. So consciousness is just this simple, basic when a sense experience is met with the mind, there is sight and the knowing of it, sound and the knowing of it, smell and the knowing of it. This is this very basic function of mind that just is this knowing capacity of mind. And sometimes people use the awareness to refer to that kind of aspect of experience. So sometimes when people talk about awareness practice, they're talking about becoming mindful of this knowing quality of mind. So these are different things, being aware, being mindful, and the mindfulness, the sati, and the consciousness, the vijnana. The mindfulness is a mental formation. It's a activity of mind. There are a lot of these mental formations. They are the engine of our doing. So anger, frustration, all forms of greed, aversion are mental formations. Also love, kindness, compassion, mindfulness, mental formations. These are factors in the mind that act, that have some agency to them. As a mental formation, mindfulness is there sometimes and not at other times. Sometimes there is this recognizing that we are aware, and other times not. This aspect of consciousness is something that happens every single moment of our experience. It is always there. Every moment of experience. Whether we're mindful or not, there is this knowing happening. Earlier in the retreat, in talking about attention and mindfulness, pointing out how we can be walking down the street and not be aware at all, not be mindful at all, and yet navigating, able to recognize, step down here or turn a corner there. So something is attending to experience. And similarly, something is knowing sights and sounds in that activity, in that, whether we're mindful or not, that knowing is going on. And so sometimes people use this word awareness to kind of refer back to this part of this process, this ordinary functioning of mind that always is happening, this consciousness, this knowing, and that we can become mindful of that aspect of experience. But that is not how Sayadaw uses the term. The term, as he uses it, is much more connected with mindfulness. And yet it is, his definition is a little broader. One time on a retreat, I kind of tried to nail him down. What do you mean when you say awareness? And he had two answers. One where he basically said, mostly I mean mindfulness. And another where he said, well, what I mean is the five faculties, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom working together. And so this, we'll explore this a little bit today. An added kind of complexity around the term mindfulness or awareness is that in the Buddhist teachings, in the Pali Canon, the Buddha actually refers to right mindfulness and wrong mindfulness. Most of the time in the Pali Canon, the word mindfulness is used by itself, and I'm pretty sure that in those situations, it is referring to right mindfulness. I haven't done an exhaustive search on that, but there are many places where it is, the word mindfulness is used alone, and it seems to be referring to right mindfulness. But he does use this phrase, wrong mindfulness. It's not in many places, but it is in the context of, he basically says, well, there's the wrong Eightfold Path. Wrong view leads to wrong intention, wrong speech, wrong action, wrong livelihood, wrong mindfulness, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness, wrong concentration. And so from that kind of context, we can understand that wrong mindfulness is when we are mindful, or when that capacity, and this is how this, when Sayadaw says awareness alone is not enough, mindfulness alone is not enough, this is really, I think, what he's pointing to, that it does take, in conjunction with this simple capacity of aware that we're aware, this self-reflective capacity of mind. That is maybe the basic function that we could call mindfulness, but that can be motivated by unwholesome qualities of mind or wholesome qualities of mind. It can be motivated by wisdom or ignorance. It can be connected. It can be arising with wisdom or ignorance. And so as an example of this, the kind of classic example of wrong mindfulness is thinking about or reflecting on a thief walking through a house trying to steal some things. And they may be incredibly aware of every step, every movement, to stay silent so that they're not discovered in the house. But the whole motivation for that awareness is not, well, what does it feel like to be a human being that's stepping? But it is greed. And so that is that capacity the mind has to know in the present moment what it's happening in the present moment, connected with an unwholesome motivation. And so the mindfulness, the awareness of our practice needs to be informed by wisdom. This makes it wise mindfulness. And so this, to me, brings in or brings together what Sayadaw points to as these functioning of the five faculties together being our mind doing the work of awareness. These faculties, again, faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, these are all mental formations also. They are activities of mind. They're not things we either have or don't have. They're processes shaped by conditions, by history, by views, by what we've heard and understood, how we've engaged. So these processes are, they're just processes at work. They are not my processes. I don't own the processes. We don't own them. We don't make them do anything. They do their own work. So the work of awareness is being aware. Awareness does the work of being aware. It's not an I, a me, a mine. Not an I who does that work of being aware. Awareness does that work. It is simply a process at work, shaped by conditions. Faith, confidence, another word we could use for faith, does the work of inspiring. Motivating us in a direction towards whatever it is that we are connecting with faith. Energy does the work of engaging. Concentration does the work of stabilizing. And wisdom does the work of understanding. And these five processes together do the job of meditation. They create the overall experience we have. These five processes working together create the overall experience we have in awareness. And so when Sayadaw said, these five processes working together are awareness, he's pointing to how these different levels or different, levels maybe not quite the right word. Strengths, maybe strength is the right word. Different strengths of these faculties at different times. When faith is strong and maybe energy is low, that will create one experience. When concentration is strong, there's another kind of experience that comes into play that how we connect to the experience of awareness. So the usual kind of flow of these five faculties in terms of the description in the suttas begins with faith. This is the order: faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, wisdom. And yet, in reflecting on this, it feels like we need to start with something before faith, because what is it that we have faith in? And that is wisdom. That is what the wisdom that the Buddha offered. And so I'd like to start this with a little bit of a review or description of where it, what it is that we have faith in. And that is the wisdom that the Buddha offered us. This is where the whole thing, the whole shaping or direction of wise mindfulness being possible even begins. Without wisdom, the mind is very likely to slip into its habits of greed, aversion, delusion, and be being aware with that perspective. So with wisdom, where we begin with wisdom is not with the embodied knowing, the wisdom of understanding itself, but rather with a kind of a borrowed wisdom. We hear teachings. This is what the texts call suttamayapanya, the wisdom that comes from hearing. Sutta meaning to hear, the wisdom that comes from hearing teachings. And so that's the first place we get wisdom, or wisdom begins, is through hearing some teachings. And the second kind of wisdom, cintamayapanya, is we take in what we've heard and begin to think about it. Does this make sense? Does this connect with my own sense of the world? Does it feel like something I want to engage with? Because this is also a piece of the wisdom of the Buddha. It is not meant to just simply be taken in as like words to memorize. It is a kind of pointing that says you have to engage, you have to act. So the wisdom of the Buddha, what he teaches, is not simply an understanding and a framework, but also practices that support us to understand that framework. So with the first thing, we hear teachings, and this is a form of wisdom. It's not the deepest form of wisdom. And then we start to think about it, reflect on it. And so using our mind, using our reflective capacity of mind, we think about the teachings. That thinking about begins to spur perhaps an interest in an actual engagement. And that's where the faith and the energy begin to connect with the wisdom. So the wisdom comes in, we hear it, we reflect on it, we think about it, and if there is the kind of sense in the mind, maybe this makes a little bit of sense to me. Or in my own case, it's like, this does not make any sense to me, but nothing else has worked, so why not try it? That even that is an expression of a form of faith, that willingness, a willingness to engage, that kind of, maybe for me, it was a suspension of disbelief. How could that possibly work? Pay attention to your anger while you're angry? What good is that going to do? But a willing suspension of disbelief, a willingness to say, okay, well, hey, my friend said it worked, I'll give it a try. So that was another piece. That's another piece, perhaps, of how faith comes in, is when we see, we not only hear something, but somebody, we have somebody we trust who has expressed or said, this has really been helpful. And my friend said that, you know, this is really helpful. You know, it works. Like, okay. So that also supports faith. So this, the wisdom kind of begins to churn inside or to kind of be massaged inside. And that, that kind of initial inspiration or spark or the phrase, you know, faith does the work of inspiring here. So that's that kind of spark almost does the work of heading us in the direction of engagement. That's the work of faith. And then the next faculty is energy. It picks up on that spark and actually engages. That's what energy does. It is this simple kind of persistence or engagement, connection with the tools, the practices. In a very simple way, we could say that's what energy is. The classic definition of energy is the energy that results from the engagement with the four right efforts. So the four right efforts, cultivating the wholesome, abandoning the unwholesome, abandoning unwholesome states that have arisen, avoiding the arising of unwholesome states that have not arisen, cultivating wholesome states that have not arisen, and maintaining wholesome states that have arisen. So the teaching of right effort embeds a particular understanding of wisdom. So the one of the kind of classic definitions of wisdom is recognizing what's skillful in terms of leading us towards freedom, towards happiness, towards release from greed, aversion, and delusion. What is unskillful? What keeps us hooked in this cycle of suffering? And so this understanding of the distinction between states of mind that take us in the direction of suffering and states of mind that take us in the direction of happiness, this is a very foundational definition of wisdom. And so this teaching of right effort in the very action of engagement brings the wisdom to bear on how we practice. And so we begin to recognize the wholesome, the unwholesome, the teaching on right effort sounds like a very active doing kind of practice, and it certainly can be. We can actively cultivate the wholesome qualities of metta, formal practices that cultivate some of these wholesome qualities. We can engage with, perhaps in concentration practices, seeing the arising of a hindrance, setting it aside, coming back to the breath, abandoning the unwholesome in that way. And yet there's a broader kind of way that these four right efforts can work. Within this practice that we're doing here, and we've talked about this just the other day, we kind of reviewed this aspect of mindfulness with this perspective of curiosity about what is happening in the present moment, with this wise mindfulness, right mindfulness. When that quality of mindfulness sees unwholesome states arising, It understands them as suffering, and it abandons them. We do not have to do the work of abandoning. Wise mindfulness does that work. Wisdom, actually the wisdom piece of that, does the work of letting those go. And so and then likewise with wholesome states, when we notice a wholesome state in mindfulness, we are aware of love or compassion. The activity of knowing that with wise mindfulness creates the conditions for that to happen more frequently. It cultivates those wholesome qualities when we are aware of them. Aware in the way that we really meet and connect, neither tarrying nor hurrying with those wholesome states, but really knowing them cultivates their strengthening. And so, right mindfulness, the way we are cultivating awareness here, the practice that we're doing of right mindfulness, embeds the four right efforts. So the activity of energy, the cultivating the four right efforts, can come through this factor of mindfulness, the next factor actually on the path, the next factor in the next faculty. So the energy, the quality of energy is kind of aiming us in the direction of the practice, in the direction of cultivating the wholesome, abandoning the unwholesome. It is the doing, the quality of the engagement with awareness, the engagement with recognizing what's here. So this energy, just a simple work that we've been doing, reminding ourselves to be aware, cultivating that energy, connecting with curiosity, cultivating that energy, using questions to spark interest in the mind, open the mind to new understanding that supports the energy. Saito makes a distinction around energy and effort. And I don't know if it's something that's in the suttas or not, but he uses this phrase, personal effort, and another phrase, Dhamma effort. So personal effort is that time, those times when it feels like we are doing the work of the meditation. We are engaged. We're reminding ourselves to be aware, remembering the teachings, applying even the simple, you know, it might be as much as applying some of the skillful means when our minds are out of balance. That can be the personal effort. And it might be as simple as using those questions, feeling ourselves a little bit stuck. It's like, huh, what else is here right now? That's a way in which, you know, when it feels like I'm doing that. There's a quality of me engaged with the practice. That's what Sayadaw would call personal effort. And that's, the practice has to begin with that. And it's not really me. I mean, there's not a true me anyway, but there is a kind of, so we've heard teachings, we have had this faith of this inspiration, and some aspect of our mind, the energy, has picked up that inspiration and is heading us in the direction. But this all can feel like a personal activity. But then as the wisdom gets stronger, the more the mind understands and there's a momentum of the mindfulness, the more wisdom is present, it starts to feel less like I'm doing it. I'm doing the practice, and it feels more effortless. And Sayadaw calls this Dharma effort, Dharma energy. Many of you have mentioned this at times, feeling like it's effortless, feeling like I don't have to do the work. And what Sayadaw points out here is that quality of energy, of that engagement, is always happening. It's not that it's effortless. It's just that it's no longer a sense of personal effort. And so in this case, wisdom is making the effort. Concentration and energy are making the effort. The wisdom does the work of the effort. And so it feels like it's not hard. I'm not having to remember things and pick things up and pull practices, tools out of my toolkit. It feels effortless. The wisdom knows what to do. So this is just the natural movement, actually, in the mind. Something is always motivating us to engage. We are never without some kind of motivation that is running the show. The sense of self sometimes feels like it's running the show. Identification feels like it's running the show. Sometimes when we are acting out of greed, aversion, or delusion, it is those qualities that are running the show. Most of the time, or much of the time, when we are not really present and mindful, the qualities of greed and aversion are making our choices for us. It feels like I may be doing it. I'm deciding this or that. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe it feels like the force of habit is just carrying us along and we are powerless to choose differently. And that's largely what is going on. The force of conditioning around these kilesa, the defilements, the greed, aversion, delusion, is so strong that those qualities of mind, those mental formations, are deciding what we're doing. This is how our system works. Something arises, a mental formation arises, and a choice is made. If it's an unwholesome mental formation, anger, a choice is made out of anger, and things unfold from there. If it's a wholesome quality, compassion, kindness, a different choice is made, and things unfold from there. So energy, it's very difficult in some ways to tease apart energy and mindfulness. They're different faculties of the mind, but we don't just apply energy in the abstract. It is energy towards mindfulness and wisdom. Is energy towards these cultivation of these faculties. And so the energy is towards, in this practice particularly, the awareness, remembering awareness, remembering mindfulness, this third faculty, cultivating awareness by recognizing it. That's the simple two basic ways of this in this practice, where we are where we are encouraging awareness. The first is just the recognition of the awareness itself, just really getting familiar with being aware. That's a lot of what we've talked about, getting familiar with what that's like. And the second is an active prompting, and this is energy reminding us to be aware. When we are aware, we can remind ourselves to be aware. So there's a saying, I think it's commentarial, I think it's in the commentaries, that the proximate cause of mindfulness is mindfulness. And, you know, that maybe sounds kind of hopeless, but, you know, fortunately, it arises. When we recognize it, then we can decide to encourage it or prompt it. And that's what we're doing when we kind of ask ourselves, aware? Am I aware? That's a kind of a prompting or a connecting with that quality, recognizing it. We also cultivate it by just a simple acknowledgement. Yes, already aware. That's more just the kind of settling into that. Yes, this is awareness. And then concentration, this fifth faculty, the fourth faculty, concentration, is this stability. It is, again, and it's not separate from these other faculties. Energy and mindfulness together, this work of connecting to being aware, those two faculties together create the conditions for a continuity of mindfulness. And continuity of mindfulness is concentration. That's the basic definition of concentration. All forms of concentration have a continuity of mindfulness, whether it is a continuity of mindfulness on a single object, a single experience that we focus on and kind of get absorbed into, or whether it's a continuity of mindfulness moment to moment on changing experience. Both of those very different experiences, very different qualities that happen in the mind, very different feelings of experience, that absorbed kind of one-pointed concentration when the mind has landed on one object and has stayed there, versus the kind of quality in the mind when it is stable on changing experience. Different experiences, but the underlying kind of commonality is continuity of mindfulness. Moment after moment, awareness is there. So for this practice, we are maybe emphasizing the moment-to-moment concentration more, and yet in certain conditions, this practice of just what's this experience like can also lead to that one-pointed concentration. So we don't even necessarily have to think, though, this practice leads to this and that practice leads to that. At the Forest Refuge some years ago, I was doing this practice pretty exclusively. And many of you have been to the Forest Refuge, but it is really quiet there. And at a certain point, the water shut off, and there was no like hum in the building at all. And the mind just whew, dove into one-pointed awareness through this practice. So, you know, we don't even have to think, well, if I'm going into one-pointed awareness, I'm doing this wrong. It's like, well, sometimes that's what the mind will do with this continuity of moment-to-moment awareness. So the continuity of mindfulness, the stability of mind, the mind will not be pulled or pushed around based on whatever's arising. Equanimity begins to get strong too. And from this stability, the mind can begin to see the wisdom, the truth that we started with, at a much deeper level, begins to see into, deeply understand directly, oh yeah, that is unhelpful, that is unskillful. That is unskillful felt in the moment as contracted dukkha experience. This is skillful felt as the movement in the direction towards release and peace and happiness. We start to understand conditionality, cause and effect, start to see into impermanent, unreliable, not self nature of experience with this continuity of mindfulness. And as I mentioned yesterday, day before, I don't remember, that continuity, that stability of mindfulness, the concentration, that joining of energy, concentration, mindfulness and concentration can come in bursts. It doesn't have to be a really long stretch of time for the mind to see deeply into that wisdom. And so these five faculties, wisdom, faith, mindfulness, concentration. I missed one. Energy. work together. And at different times, different ones of them will be stronger than at other times. And perhaps one of the reasons why awareness feels different at different times is because ones of these quality are stronger or weaker. So for instance, at the beginning of the practice, when we are working with the Suttamayapanya and Chintamayapanya, kind of borrowing wisdom, where it's not quite in our system, that is when we have to work. We have to use that wisdom. We have to, the faculties of faith and energy need to be engaged with that wisdom to try things, look at things, explore things. And it feels like work. But as faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration strengthen, the seeing into that truth, that wisdom begins to, the mind begins to penetrate and understand that. And then that in turn kind of loops back and strengthens the faith, which strengthens the energy, which strengthens the mindfulness. And so these kind of begin to strengthen each other. And at some point, the wisdom gets strong enough that we have this experience of effortless practice. When Sayadaw calls this wisdom running the practice, or this Dhamma effort. So wisdom basically in charge of the choices that are made in the practice. As this momentum of mindfulness happens with this strong wisdom, we can experience a kind of very natural awareness where it just feels very much like there's, again, no effort, and the mindfulness is just able to see, is just seeing the functioning of the mind, the natural processes at work in the mind. Sometimes it can see this at very kind of gross levels, ordinary life-like levels, and sometimes at very deep levels. So sometimes it might feel like experience is just really ordinary, but very clear. Doing our yogi job and having a clarity of presence. Someone mentioned putting away the salsa the other day and just so present and aware. This is that kind of ordinary level, but we can tell there's this wisdom at work. The mind is very clear, very present. And yet at other times, maybe more often on retreat or in the sitting practice, maybe we start to see the deeper functioning, the processes that create our experience, the perceptions, the feeling, that knowing quality of mind. We can sometimes see those at work too in this natural awareness. We can, when wisdom is strong, we can just simply settle back and watch the mind, what the mind gets up to, how it constructs suffering, where it can let go, watching it doing the letting go as the awareness receives something, and just watch it vanish. The stronger the wisdom is, the more naturally suffering is released. Because that is one of the jobs of wisdom. Wisdom will release suffering. So the shift from personal effort to Dharma effort, or where wisdom is kind of running the show, this can be a little bit of an edge sometimes for us. It feels good. You know, it does feel good when it feels like there's not much effort needed to be present with experience. But old habits of mind can just come right back in. Like, we are maybe just observing what's happening very naturally, and then the old habit of wanting to understand, wanting to be able to analyze and categorize just pops in. So it can kind of take some time for us to really trust this Dharma effort is sufficient, that we don't have to get involved and pick things up and make things happen. Certain kinds of habits of mind, of wanting to know, wanting to understand, can be very deep in our mind. And yet, you know, so that if that's what's arising, we just get to look at that. Wanting to know is happening. Leaning in. Digging. Analyzing. are happening. Again, they're just conditioned processes doing their thing. So it's not a kind of continual progression from personal effort to Dhamma effort. Would be nice if it kind of only went one way. But at different times, certain of these faculties are stronger or weaker. You know, sometimes when concentration is not as strong, energy and mindfulness need to do more work. When wisdom is not as strong, faith and energy need to do more work. And the conditions change during the day. So however it is in this moment, we really have to be honest with ourselves as to where we are. We can sometimes move into that place of Dhamma effort, and then when that the conditions for that fade and we're back in the place of needing to actually have the sense of personal effort, engaging with energy and faith again, borrowing wisdom, bringing the questions in, more actively engaged in that way, sometimes we can resist that because it feels heavy, or it feels like, and most of it is just our own mind, like, oh, I don't want to have to do that again. But as we just start to just accept the conditions that are here, there's much less suffering around that. It's like, okay, well, this is, effort is required right now. That's what needs to happen. And remembering this, just enough effort for this moment is all we need to do. This light touch of effort. What is the level of effort that's most helpful right now? This tuning, this quality. So the experience of awareness changes based on, partly at least, based on these different depths of these faculties as they're working together. And honoring how it is. It's just the conditions of this moment that we can meet. No one really doing these things, again, this kind of recognition of these processes as processes that just do their job. No need to impute an owner, a doer. Seeing awareness at work, watching, knowing, faith inspiring, energy engaging, awareness awaring. concentration stabilizing, and wisdom understanding. Let's just sit for a moment.